Welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy shit. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast, episode 10. Episode 10 for July 31st, 2019. I am your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm your co-host, Frank Natel.
And welcome to episode 10. Frank, you've been on vacation for a while. You want to let everybody know how it was before we get busy?
Oh, man, it was fantastic. I was in Paris, and I found Paris to be lovely, as always. It's changed, of course, with Notre Dame having experienced a major fire. You can't go in there, but went into a few places. I took the Seine River cruise, which at night was fantastic. And Paris is, it's always changing. Like everything in life, it changes. But, you know, it's nice to see they're dealing with change. And I think they're dealing with it from the standpoint of culture. Okay. But, you know, in Paris and in France in general, protest is like it's a sport. It's a national pastime. And they are, you know, they're protesting their working conditions, their wages and things like that. So, you know, it's a case study in democracy, just like, you know, Puerto Rico gave us a masterclass in democracy. I went on from Paris to Italy and visited the village. And it's like stepping back in time to go back to a place with only 100 people and no store or anything else there in the location. But it has, you know, fresh mountain drinking water that you can get out of a fountain in the middle of the village. And, you know, it's always like so refreshing, literally and figuratively, to go there and just recharge the batteries. It was way too short this time. I was only in the village for 5 days, but rest assured, I will go back. But it's good to be back home and be with you again.
It is good to have you back. Phyllis filled in for you on Wednesday, and honestly, she did a great job. But you know what? You're the one and only, my friend. That's it.
Oh, thank you. I love listening to you and Phyllis, though. You guys had a good vibe going, so thank you to both of you.
Yep. We will have her on again. We absolutely will. Before we start talking about not only last night's debate, but what we're kind of expecting for, you know, round two for the I guess you want to call it the main event. I don't think CNN planned it that way. It just the draw kind of made that happen. A few days back, our resident racist in chief on the 27th decided that he was, for whatever reasons known only to him, apparently, he decided to start taking some jabs at, of all people, Elijah Cummings, right? I'm going to read his couple of his tweets to you here real quick, Frank, and I know you've read them and, you know, you've seen all this, but Representative, this is back, the first one on July 27th. These all happened on the 27th, but this is them in chronological order. Representative Elijah Cummings has been a brutal bully, shouting and screaming at the great men and women of Border Patrol about conditions at the southern border, why he capitalized southern border, I don't know, when actually his Baltimore district is, in caps, far worse and more dangerous. His district is considered the worst in the USA. He capitalized worst, W and worst. Next tweet, as proven last week during a congressional tour, the border, capital B, again, just go along with it, is clean, efficient, and well-run, just very crowded. Cumming District, not Cummings, just Cumming District, and D is capitalized, is disgusting, rat, and rodent-infested mess. If he spent more time in Baltimore, maybe he could clean up this very dangerous and filthy place. I'm just going to continue. Why so much money is sent to the Elijah Cummings District, this time it's not capitalized, when it's considered the worst run and most dangerous anywhere in the United States? No human being would want to live there. Where is all the money going? How much is stolen? That's bold coming from the president. Investigate this corrupt mess immediately! !! excuse me. Next tweet, Elijah Cummings, spends all of his time trying to hurt innocent people through, quote, oversight. Again, he capitalized that. He does nothing for his very poor, very dangerous, and very bad run district. Take a look. Then he hashtagged, I don't even know how the fuck this happened. He actually hashtagged Blacks for Trump 2020. A lot to digest there, Frank. We had a few days to go through it. You kind of live in Baltimore, so I'm really curious as to your thoughts about, well, everything. Just, yeah. I don't even know where the hell you're going to start, but God bless. Go for it.
Yeah, you know, first of all, I've had some time to digest. The first thing that I would say is it's absolutely racist. There is no doubt that the response and the attack is built out of racism. And you don't have to examine too deeply to understand that. You wrote a great piece recently. You blogged on this and wrote on this. And I thought it was a great piece pointing out how Trump is always picking on and using the opportunity to try to bully people of color. And this is another instance of that. And one of the lines that he said in this tweet rant is that no human being would want to live here in Baltimore, or in West Baltimore in particular. And, you know, that's basically saying, it's a coded way of saying that, you know, black people aren't human beings, because obviously there's a lot of black people that live in West Baltimore. So, you know, it's horrifically racist. And for anybody to try to sugarcoat it or say otherwise is quite frankly insulting to anybody's intelligence at all. I mean, it's just like, don't even come at me with that. It's way, way racist. I don't care how you try to sugarcoat it or change it or whatever. It's racist. Now, I will say this. This is a complicated issue, because the people that live in West Baltimore, they want better for themselves. They want better for their district. And if it causes attention on the problems that they suffer, and I will say this, we could do 10 more shows on West Baltimore and places like it and explain why it is the way it is. It's very complicated, and that's the hard thing, to get to the heart of why it is what it is. But West Baltimore is a place that was redlined, and I'm going to just very briefly explain why West Baltimore became what it's like. There is a road. If you remember years ago, Master Patsy, remember when Route 60 used to just end and didn't connect Newcastle to Chippewa or the airport? Remember that?
Yeah, my brother was either a junior or senior in high school, you know, playing hoops whenever we were making that trip almost weekly.
Right, and then they finally finished it and connected it, right? And then how much it so much easier to drive from Newcastle to the Pittsburgh airport. It's almost like you can drive from Newcastle to the Pittsburgh airport faster than you can go from downtown Pittsburgh to the Pittsburgh airport.
Yeah.
Okay, and it changed things. Well, West Baltimore is not connected to Baltimore or East Baltimore because there's a road to nowhere that just stops. You can go through neighborhoods and you can go through city side streets and things like that and connect the two areas. But there is a major, you know, artery that could have created a source of transportation to West Baltimore that would have connected it to basically the rest of the world. But it was never finished. That's one thing. There's another thing that basically West Baltimore is redlined in the sense that transportation routes, bus lines, schools, grocery stores don't really service that area. Okay. To have like a CVS is a major thing in West Baltimore. Literally it's major that they have a CVS in that area. So there's very historical reasons behind this. Some of them are political, and some of them could be cured by political intervention and government intervention. What I find interesting is that, you know, the Republicans would basically be the ones who say government shouldn't cure all the problems. Government is not the cure for all the problems. That we need to have some private cures for problems. Well, I agree with that. And also we need some government intervention and some regulation. And it's too long for us to go through all that. But I'm just going to say this. Every district in our country, just about every district, you can go to every major city across our country and even rural areas across the country, you're going to find problems with infestation of rodents. You're going to find problems with drugs. You're going to find problems with killings. I mean, look in Newcastle. While I was away on vacation, there were murders in Newcastle.
Yep.
So, you know, the thing that I want to come back to, and this is what pisses me off about our national news media and everybody else, really, quite frankly, that covers this story, is they completely forgot about the fact that what's happening at the border is directly controlled by the government. It is absolutely 100% directly controlled by the government. And we have chosen to treat other human beings this way. And that's what Elijah Cummings was bringing to the attention of the people by holding that hearing and asking those questions, is that we have immediate choice in how we deal with this situation at the border. And we have immediate control, and we can, there, it's like a test, right? When you do an experiment in a lab, you try to control all the factors and say, I'm going to only have one factor to really determine what outcome we see here. And then if that factor doesn't impact the outcome, then we're going to add another factor. And then you can say, we controlled the experiment this way. Well,
right.
In West Baltimore, you've got to change 20 factors to get change. Okay. At the border, we could change one factor and say, we're going to make a difference. We're going to give these people, you know, clean water, food. We're going to give them, you know, we're not going to hold them in cages. We're going to make the decision that we're going to treat them humanely. That's the one factor we're going to change. We're going to treat them humanely. So that's, you know, it's ridiculous. And people have forgotten that's what this was about. We don't have to say that, well, we're going to abandon the issue of treating people humanely. And also we're going to forsake West Baltimore or other places like it because we're going to treat people humanely at the border. Both those things should be done. We don't trade off rights. We don't trade off human rights. We don't trade off resolving problems one for the other. West Baltimore and Baltimore itself is a beautiful place. There's wonderful people in all of Baltimore. There's wonderful people in West Baltimore. I used to walk twice a week from whatever spot I was able to park to the Enoch Pratt Library, which was right at the epicenter of the riots in Baltimore. I would walk through that area day and night without incident. People would come up, talk to me. Hey, how you doing? You know, what are you doing this week? Blah, blah, blah. Listen, I would love to stay in that location. I would love to have, you know, dinner in that location. There are human beings. Matter of fact, there are great human beings that live there. And there are great human beings all over Baltimore and in the 7th District and Elijah Cummings District. I can tell you personally, I went out and posted photos of Baltimore that weekend because people need to understand, you know, yes, there are some places that have garbage strewn about. Yes, there are some places that have dilapidated houses. Guess what? I was in Philadelphia today. The same things exist there. But the point is, we could go around to every district and point this out. But it takes away from the attention of the fact that we are intentionally treating human beings horribly at the border. And that's what's been lost. And instead, we're talking about the comments and the tit for tat and the back and forth. No, no, no. Let's stop for a second. Remember, this is what we're talking about. And Trump doesn't want us talking about it. So he's diverted the attention to this conversation.
Yeah, Frank, you know, you make a bunch of good points. Number one, now just a little bit off of what you said, I just want to reiterate. If I'm not mistaken, Elijah Cummings goes home every night. So he goes to he goes to his district. He lives there. He goes there every fucking night, right?
Yes.
So it's not okay. So we got that out of the way. I'm a bit pressed for words. Because what this clown has decided to do is he decided to fall back to racism, right? Which to me is his bread and butter, right? This is his wheelhouse. He is, and like I said and I wrote in my piece, which is on Medium, by the way, not to give myself a plug, but it is, that this guy is a bona fide 100% indoctrinated card carrying racist. There is no fucking doubt in my mind. He is. He has shown this over and over and over again. And as I stated in my piece, he's proud of it. He wears it like a badge. And you know, he can try to bullshit people and say he's the least racist person in the world. But you and I both know what you say and what you do are not necessarily the same thing, right? I find it interesting that he decides to try to change topics or try to divert attention or try to change the narrative by falling back on a racist way of doing things. Now, my wife, the psychologist, will tell you that whenever you're trying to change narratives, whenever you're trying to change the focus, whenever you're trying to get yourself from under the spotlight, you're going to go to your strength or what you perceive to be your strength in order to make your best argument in order to push things away. And as an attorney, you probably understand what I'm talking about, right? This is what he falls back to time and time again. Well, whenever you do this, whenever you're trying to make this pivot, whenever you're trying to get yourself out of the spotlight, whenever you have a moment of desperation, your true colors shine through, right? It is the most perfect moment of sincere honesty that anybody could possibly have. And this, he's shown it. He's honestly, totally and completely a racist, bigoted piece of work. That's all I can say. He's just a total, completely bigoted piece of work. The more moving question, I should say, and that's probably not a good way to put it, but where's all the folks on his side, all the conservatives, right? And I do not believe every conservative is racist, simply because, you know, I have a degree in engineering and we do a lot of math, and it's totally impossible for every conservative to be a racist. But at what point, Frank, do you sit there and you say, you know what? Silence is compliance. If you're silent about something, you're compliant with it. You agree with it. And when it's something as outrageous, something as bad as this, at what point do you start looking at people and saying, you know what, it's time for you to step up and say this isn't right? And whenever they're not doing it, whether it be out of fear, whether it be out of, you know, just because when it comes to politics, people are, you know, a lot of people are very passive, right? I mean, they have their beliefs and they have how they lean, whether they be very conservative or very liberal. They on the outside, they just kind of they really don't act on it, right? In a interactive point of view, they just vote and that's it, right? You really don't hear a whole lot from them. But at what point does it get so bad where you have to step up and say, you know what, God damn it, that's wrong. This is wrong, and we got to stop this. We got to finish this. Where are those people at?
You got me. You honestly have got me. I don't know that they, you know, that they truly exist. There are people who have made little rumblings and said, you know, I don't necessarily agree with the way he said things. You know, but I don't see it as racism and all this kind of stuff. You know, I think that the thing that Trump, and this is going to lead us to our later conversation about the Democratic debates, and I don't want to get into it just yet, but because we have a lot to talk about on this topic. But, you know, I think that what Trump has succeeded in doing is changing the narrative away from the obvious. It's like, look, could you imagine going to court and saying you're accused of beating the hell out of your wife, okay? And she comes to court black and blue. And somebody comes to court to testify and says, yeah, I walked into his house and he's just bludgeoning her. And and then you say, well, listen to this person coming in here saying that I bludgeoned my wife. Last week, I saw him beating the hell out of both his kids. And by the way, the judge who's presiding over this case, he let his dog starve to death last week. So, you know, let's talk about that. And then the court system would say, oh, yeah, you're right. And the media would descend upon the courtroom and say, absolutely right. Patsy, you know, he's brought up a great point here. Why do we have this judge who let his dog starve to death? And why are we listening to this witness who said, Patsy did something when that person was home beating the hell out of their kids. That's what Trump has done. Because I will tell you, Patsy, and it may not be happy for you to hear this, but as I'm driving back into Baltimore from Philly today, I was listening to a predominantly African-American radio station, and the callers are all calling in saying, we have a problem in West Baltimore. We have a problem in Baltimore. There's garbage all over the streets. The city doesn't make sure that we have garbage cleanup. We used to have garbage cleanup two times a week. Now we only have it one time a week. Parents aren't telling their kids to pick up the trash. They just throw trash on the street and their parent just lets them do it. So they're examining their own culture, their own neighborhood, and saying, you know, if the spotlight is on us about this, we need to have more pride about ourselves, which is not a bad thing. Okay, look, we all need to clean up our own house, me included. Everybody has to make sure that, you know, you wash, you have dinner, you dirty the pots and you dirty the dishes. That means you got to clean them up, or else you're going to have, you know, dirty dishes all the time. You're going to have bugs coming into your house, whatever. So, you know, we all need to examine things about ourselves, and that's not wrong. But what has happened is, instead of saying these comments were just directed at our community, when they could have been directed at any community in the country, right, including white communities,
right,
it's hurtful. First off, people get hurt by it, and then meaning that their pride is hurt, and then they say, yeah, you know what, we do need to clean up. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to be self-reflective and examine that. But what they don't see in front of them is a trailer park in Nebraska or whatever, that's just, the doors are falling off, it's all rusty, which it does exist. They don't see that every day because they don't live that life. They don't see these poor immigrants who are sitting on the floor in concrete and they're, you know, drinking out of toilets.
Well, no,
because
they
don't live that life. They don't see it every day.
You know, Frank, that's the one thing that really bothers me, I think. Well, not the one thing. There's a lot of things that really bother me about this. But in this case, one of the things that gets me, it's not like these people are living in these conditions and don't recognize that they're conditions that no one should live in. I mean, it's not like they're living their lives oblivious to the fact that there's garbage everywhere. No one wants to live in garbage. You know, it's not like they're just walking around like, oh, holy shit, where'd all this garbage come from? When this happened? You know, it's like when you don't have the resources, whenever your municipality doesn't have the resources, whenever you as a homestead or as a human being, you know, if you're living on your own or maybe you're just renting an apartment or whatever, don't have the resources to address these things, they simply don't get addressed. I mean, this isn't rocket science. This is no different than, look, I would love to drive a Lexus, right? But I drive a Jeep. There's a reason I drive a Jeep and not a Lexus.
Right.
You know, it's not because I really, really, really like my Jeep. Well, it's not true. I really, really do like my Jeep. But, you know, it's because other things also require my attention, my time, my resources, and my money. And whenever you have a combination of a municipality that obviously has had money taken away from it or has not been able to reap finances from wherever they've been reaping them, or you have families who just I hate to say it because it sounds simplistic, but just can't afford certain things because, you know, well, you still have to put food on the table. You know, you still have to put clothes on your kids' backs. You still got to, you know, buy your school lunch. You still have to figure out a way to get to work every day. You know, you're not doing your community any favors as a government or something that is above your local government or your local municipality. You're not doing these smaller things any favors whenever you start taking things away from them.
Well, I'm going to tell you something.
Exactly
right what you're saying.
To say that this area has gotten,
and that it's been sunk into nothing, is inaccurate. Baltimore had been earmarked with, I believe it was a $900 million grant for transportation to try to connect into D.C. And instead of matching that grant or instead of allowing that grant to work for what it was supposed to, Governor Larry Hogan, who is a Republican, refused to match the grant and work with Baltimore to allow the connection to occur. And the money went back to the federal government, went back to D.C. So Baltimore reaped no benefit from this money that was earmarked for it. Those kind of transportation initiatives would certainly help the city of Baltimore. It would certainly help the working class folks to be able to get to and from D.C. on an easier way. Look, I used to commute from Baltimore to D.C. It's the longest 37-mile commute you will ever do in your life. It is absolutely wretched. So, you know, we have no high-speed train. Our train that goes from D.C. to Baltimore or Baltimore to D.C., it has 13 stops, maybe 9 stops on the quote-unquote express. It takes you easily 1 hour, if not more, to go from station to station. And then you have to get on the metro to go to your local stop in D.C., wherever that may be, which could add another, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes, depending on how the metro is running. Nonetheless, the other issue that I said we could spend so much time on is in intra-city in Baltimore, bus routes are limited through West Baltimore. If people want to get on a bus to go to work, it's difficult. It's literally difficult to get buses to and from places to go to shopping. I mean, look, we take for granted, a lot of America takes for granted. You jump in a car, you go get your groceries, you come back home with your groceries. That doesn't happen in Baltimore. It doesn't happen in West Baltimore especially. There's no grocery store for these people. They have little bodegas here and there, but they have to get on a bus or walk to long, long distances to go to a basic grocery store, and they have to put their groceries on a bus, transfer buses to get to back to their location, and that's what they have to do if they don't have a car, and a lot of folks don't have cars. So, you know, there's so many factors that are involved in this that are out of the control of the people. Some are in the control of the people. But listen, these are prideful people who don't want to just say, oh, it's somebody else's fault. They will self-examine and they will try to take responsibility. And they have. And they've come out to meetings that I've been at to try to take control of their destiny. But as you said, you hit the nail on the head. Sometimes you need resources that are outside of your control. Sometimes you need assistance, and I don't care whether you're Republican or Democrat. When you call the fire department, you want the fire department to come, you know, when your house is on fire, and nobody directly pays the fire department to do that. That is a socialized program, just like buses and schools and all that. And it's not socialism. It is shared responsibility with the public that we all share. So these idiots,
well, yeah,
I think they need to get off their high horse.
I refuse to believe that, you know, people don't recognize that no one wants to live in garbage, Frank. You know, no one wants to live in squander. You know, and that's the problem we have, is you got the people who watch the Fox Entertainment Network, who look at brown and black people and say, yeah, that's what they like. That's how they are. That's how they are, right? That's right. What kills me. No one wants to live in that shit. And you want to know why these quote-unquote angry black men, because that's, you know, that was the big thing about Obama, right? He didn't want to be the angry black man. You want to know why they're fucking angry? Well, that's why, because you look at them like they're second-class citizens. Like, you know, they want what they've been dealt. Right. It kills me. No one wants to live in that shit. No one wants to sit there and say, you know what? This is how I want to live. I want to live as poorly and as desperately as possible. I want people to follow me through a store. I want people to look at me like I've done something wrong as soon as I walk in the fucking building. You know, what the hell's wrong with people? No one wants that. Why do you think these folks want it whenever you don't? Do you really think that there's a disconnect between what you want for yourself and for your family that these other people don't want?
People don't want to stop and think about it that way, Patsy. That's too much for them to take. So, it's disgusting that we have a president who, instead of saying, you know, let's fix this all, let's work to fix the problem at the border, which we're not going to treat people inhumanely. And also, I see a problem right up the road 37 miles from here in D.C. that I could basically help to appropriate funds, direct the country, direct the Congress to say, you know what, that district was redlined. We need to have better transportation, better schools, better infrastructure for that location. And we need to reappropriate the money for transportation again to that location. And we need to put pressure on Governor Hogan and say, you know, your people are suffering in your state, in the city of Baltimore. And we're going to tell you, as a federal government, here's the money, now work with it, you know? So, you know, he could do those kind of things, but that's not his intent. That really isn't his intent. He just wants to vilify the whole district and vilify the man who gets elected out of that district, whose job is really not to make sure that the funds that get appropriated get used properly. He's basically just trying to get the funds appropriated to help the district. Then it's up to the local politicians, the governor, the city council members, the county council members, the mayor, et cetera, et cetera. Those folks are responsible for allocating the dollars appropriately within the projects that they have to fund to make the area work well. So, you know, for years, what's in the 7th District and in other places in Baltimore, if you come to Baltimore and you go to the Inner Harbor, or you go to East Baltimore, or you go to the Canton area, or you go out further into Harford County, which is part of the 7th District, you'll see very wealthy, you know, areas, beautiful areas, tourist areas, homes that are to die for. That's all in this same region, same district that he was talking about. But those areas were not redlined. Okay.
Well, Frank, before we get off topic, let me ask you a question, because you brought up a good point that I want to see. Do you think? And let's face it, this sounds to me like this is an area or a group of. Whenever you said redline, I immediately think segregated. Do you think that's what happened? And if it is, do you think it was intentional?
Absolutely. There is historical literature and proof, and there is a case in New York, Westchester County, that proved it, and there's a case in Baltimore County that proved it happened here. And it's 100% accurate, undeniable, that there was de facto segregation. After World War II, what they did was they segregated Black folks into an area that was less desirable, less serviced. They cut off services to those areas, the transportation and the roadways and the factories and everything else were not located in those areas. The schools were not located in those areas. The shopping areas were not located in those areas. They put them into these undesirable locations, and then they failed to build infrastructure to meet the demand of the people that were in those locations. It was clearly done with that intent.
That is absolutely disgusting.
And the absolutely federal dollars, disgusting. The federal dollars that continue to come in for housing gets redirected to elderly housing, gets redirected to single family housing. When you've got families in West Baltimore and other places in Baltimore County that have 5, 6, 4, 5, 3, 4 kids.
So it basically gets redirected to every place except where it was meant to be directed to.
Exactly. And it's controlled by these agencies. So when the agencies get sued by organizations like my former organization, and you go through the whole history and you dredge up the history of this all and you show the courts this, and then they say, oh crap, you're right. And then they try to make it right. But you have to go through suing the bastards before you can force them to pay the money that they're supposed to pay towards the services that need to be there for the people that live there.
Which is where the money was supposed to go originally to begin with.
Right.
That's disgusting. Wow. You know what, Frank? We could go on and on and on about this. And I don't mean to cut it short, because it is really, really, really important. But we are a bit pressed for time, and so I wanted to talk to you real quick about last night's round one of the debates, what I like to call the opening act, because with the exception of Elizabeth Warren, And yeah, I'm putting Bernie in there too. With the exception of Elizabeth Warren, it seemed to me that this was the opening act. These are the also runs. These are the people that want to be able to make it to the big stage who just aren't going to do it. What did you think of last night, and what are your takeaways from it?
I'll tell you, you know, I'm so glad you asked. And my takeaway is this: who makes me the happiest or the most excited about the prospect of watching these what are otherwise kind of predictable, dull debates? Because, like, you're going to hear from Bernie what you always hear from Bernie. You're going to hear from Elizabeth Warren what you always hear from Elizabeth Warren. That doesn't take away from the fact that their platform is good in certain structures and good for certain things. I'm not saying that it isn't. But what made me most interested about last night was Williamson. And, you know, I think that she is never going to be the nominee, okay?
I agree.
It's fine. You know, it's fine. But the fact of the matter is, the shakeup that she brings to this process is what is necessary. The, you know, she is, I'll say, she is a warrior in lamb's clothing. You know what I mean? She's the type of person that'll come at you and say, this is about love, and we all have to love one another. We have to believe in miracles and all this stuff. But at the same time, she is coming at Trump like nobody else. And she's coming at the Republican Party like nobody else. And in fact, she's coming at the Democrat Party like nobody else. Because the fact of the matter is, if you don't wake up, not you, the Democrat Party and the people who want to lead the Democrat Party don't wake up to the fact that the Democrat supporters, the people who go out and pull the lever for a Democrat, and the independents who go pull the lever for a Democrat to go beat Donald Trump, if they don't, those people who want to represent the party don't realize that we want a fighter, that we want somebody who's going to recognize that the people that are meth addicted in West Virginia, that are meth addicted and opioid addicted in Nebraska and Ohio, and that have no jobs and have depression in their counties, and the people in West Baltimore want their trash picked up, and that we don't realize that those folks need real change, real change, real fast, and that we have to empower those people to effectuate change in all these locations, and that we have to give them real voices, not just lip service, we're going to lose. You know, the Democrat Party will again lose to Donald Trump, and that's a fact. So I loved her message last night, not because I think she's personally going to win, but because it's a wake-up call.
I don't know if I put it in our group or if I was talking to an individual, but one of the things that got me about last night was two things. And, you know, we may have our disagreements about things, but as long as we're heading in the same direction, you know, that makes me happy, because that means we just have the same goal. It's just a matter of how we're going to get there. I think the Democrats are making a big mistake whenever they're talking about healthcare as much as they are. Okay. I think they're trying to change it far too radically. And it's not that I disagree with how they want to change it, and let's not understand that. I don't think that it's that I disagree with how they want to change it, because I've said forever that insurance companies should be outlawed. But it sounded to me like we had a whole bunch of people who were talking to a whole lot of people who live in California and New York, in cities like Chicago, who are going to get the Democratic vote anyhow. But the people who live in Iowa and Montana and places where Trump only won by a couple thousand votes, who are really, really scared about their health care. I'm wondering if – and those are the places that the Democrats have to win, okay? Democrats are going to win California. There's no doubt. I don't give a – you could put Mickey Mouse on the ballot as a Democrat. He's going to win California. You could put Mickey Mouse on the ballot in New York, and he's going to win New York, right? I'm not so sure he's going to win Indiana. I'm not so sure he's going to win Iowa. I'm not so sure he's going to win either of the Dakotas, or if we go North or South Carolina, right? I'm not so sure he's going to win Ohio. And right now, even our home, you know, even our home state, even Pennsylvania is up for grabs right now. I wonder if this change that they're talking about is just too radical for people who are afraid that, well, they don't necessarily like their insurance or their insurance company or the coverage they have. The fact that they have the government coming in and telling them that this is what you're going to do and this is how it's going to be, period, end of story, might be a bridge too far. And I think the Democrats are really kind of missing the boat in this. That's number one. So I want to hear your response to that. However, and then number two, at the same time, which is the other end of this. So it sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but I'm really not. I was really excited about the energy and this desire for change and this desire to move forward that I'm seeing, even on the first night, right? Even with the and you know, you kind of touched on it. Most of these people they have no chance of getting the nomination, right? Out of everybody that was on the stage last night, the two that had the best shot were Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. And Bernie's dropping like a fucking stone, whether people want to admit it or not, he is. Elizabeth Warren is rising, Bernie's falling, and the fact of the matter is they're not too far away from each other, but they're still headed in opposite directions. Do you think that spending as much time and going, number one, and number two, going as in such radical positions from what we have as a status quo is a detriment to the Democrats? And do you think that's something that the Republicans are going to jump on and say, look, we told you that they're socialists and they're going to take your shit away. We have a better plan, even if they really don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think no matter who the Democratic nominee is, you're going to have that argument from the Republicans that they're going to say, they're going to label whoever it is socialist. You know,
right. And Buttigieg kind of pointed that out, didn't he?
Yeah.
Which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think he made a good point and acknowledging that right up front and saying, you know, I think that whoever the Democratic nominee is and strategist behind the Democratic Party needs to start reframing the issue of, you know, socialist, you know, democratic policies are rooted in capitalism, in democracy, in a shared responsibility. As a patriot and as a Democrat, you care about shared responsibility, and we all share responsibility for one another. I think that, you know, and then framing every Republican as a fascist. Because let's face it, if you've gone along with this policy of concentration camps and you haven't spoken out against it, you're a fascist. Okay. So if you want to start segregating people and you want to start treating other human beings this way, who's next? Is it going to be the old people when they get to the point where your health care isn't good enough and you're compartmentalized to live in a home? And we say, well, we don't have the money for that. Where's the money going to come from to feed these old people who can't feed themselves? You know, let's just get rid of them. That's fascism. That's what the Republicans are about. Well, look, scare the hell out of people, because guess what? You ought to be scared. You ought to be scared of these bastards. They are scary people, man. And that's what we need to do, is start scaring people into voting against them. They want to scare people out of voting against the Democrats by calling them socialists. Let's start scaring people about the Republicans. They're fucking fascists. They'll kill you. As soon as you become a burden on society, they're going to kill you off, buddy. That's what they're going to do. So I think that's where this script needs to be flipped, and rightly so. And somebody needs to strategize around that and really start hammering it home. And as far as the Democrats go, I'm excited for tonight to see whether, you know, there's some fireworks, because there was the beginning of fireworks last night. And Biden, like, he seems like he's chomping at the bit to fight. Like, he wants to fight, and people are telling him, don't fight, don't fight, don't fight. Be Mr. Nice Guy. And I think Biden is like, you know, F it, man. I'm going to take my gloves off. So I'm interested to see how he goes about it tonight.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think tonight's going to be kind of telling in a lot of ways. I really believe this is kind of a make or break night for Biden. And he doesn't have to like hit home runs, right? He doesn't have to hit all the talking points and make all the sound bites. I do think he needs to show that he is very well prepared and he can make a good solid argument, because I promise you, Kamala Harris is ready. I promise you, she's ready. She's prepped. And if he's going to try to come back at her, he better be on his game, because I promise you, she is.
She's got to be very, very aware and savvy about her political record as a prosecutor, because that's where there's going to be some chinks in the armor, and she has to be prepared for the attacks on that. But I think in a national election, she can use that to her benefit. So she can't back away from it too much. She has to be like owning that responsibility that she had as a prosecutor, explaining it well, and not shying away from that fact that that was her role and that she did it well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think from what I've seen, and honestly, I haven't followed her career throughout everything, right? I did a little bit of research, because doing this is kind of what we have to do. Her career has been pretty good. It's been rather stellar, I think. Of course, there's been some stumbles along the way, but fuck, we're all human. I mean, we've all had stumbles. She's not pristine, but none of us are, which is a good thing. And Joe has shown from time to time in the course of his career that he stumbles, and I'm not talking about, you know, like kind of saying things like off the cuff, like whenever he said about healthcare, whenever he leaned over to Obama, whenever there was a hot mic and he said, boy, this is a big fucking deal, right? I'm not talking about little gaffes like that, because we all do them. And I think the press makes too big a deal over little gaffes like that. I mean, even with Bush, right? The second Bush, you know, he had gaffes all the time and they made a big deal out of it. And I always looked at it like, oh, come on. He didn't realize it was on, or that's just how he is for real. Who really gives a fuck? That's not really the gist of the whole thing. That's just, you know, that's just clickbait. But this is going to be a pretty good test for him, and he's either going to, and I don't think this, if he does well, I don't think it propels him, because he kind of has a big lead, but it kind of keeps the status quo. But if he falters, if he has that same moment that he had whenever Kamala Harris hit him when busing. I hate to say it, but, and it's early, but in my mind, he's kind of fucked.
Yeah. And it's okay if that happens, because then maybe, you know, maybe that's what needs to happen, is like, let's separate the wheat from the chaff at this point. But at the same time, I don't think that happened tonight. I think that he'll be a strong candidate till the end. And that'll be a good thing for the Democratic Party, to have both he and Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren be strong candidates till we get to Super Tuesday, and let's see who's standing after that.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. I think that the Democratic Party needs more than one stellar candidate. They need two or three, or maybe even four, who's just going to push each other and you know, kind of shape the direction that this is going to go. What I hope doesn't happen is what happened the last time around, where Bernie held on far too long. And, you know, he didn't do Hillary any favors. Let's put it that way.
No, not at all. And you know, there was a populist movement, and the populist movement is something that carried Trump into the White House. And, you know, it should be a wake up call, though. Like, It didn't do any favors for Hillary, but it's also something that the Democratic Party needs to examine and understand, that there were a lot of people who felt, you know, done wrong by that process, whether they were Hillary people or whether they were Bernie people, you know. And really, it's something to examine how hopefully that kind of thing doesn't happen again. The other message I'll come back to is Williamson's message last night. Although she was kind of preaching that wake-up call, she also said, I'll never do anything to take away a vote from the eventual nominee. Whoever that Democratic nominee is, you will never see me later on in this process do anything that undermines that person.
Yeah, that was – I'll be honest with you, Frank. I thought that was kind of big, because, you know, I seriously doubt that Bernie could have made the same commitment.
Right. He's a little too selfish. Too selfish.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. And as much as you know, I kind of have my problems with her. I thought that showed to me, that kind of showed her true character, right? And I was like, damn, girl, all right, you know what? Go for it. You know, you now have my attention because you showed a legitimacy. And whether I agree with you or not, whenever you show a legitimacy, I'm more than willing to listen to you. And I thought that was a big moment for her.
Yes.
What are you, before we wrap this up, what are you expecting tonight? Anything you think is going to go off the rails or you know, just your thoughts about tonight real quick.
I do think you're going to see, I wouldn't call it off the rails, but I think you're going to see a little more passion, a little more fire tonight out of Biden. I think you'll see it matched by a measured, smart response from Kamala Harris. I think she will definitely not lose any points tonight. I think she'll be well prepared, like you said. I think you might see, I think you might see somebody, I don't know who it might be, but you might see one of the other candidates who's up there kind of by the luck of the draw on the big attraction night try to take some swings. Because what do they have to lose? This is probably their last time. If they're trending at 1% or less than 1%, let's say Beto O'Rourke or something, somebody like that, has to make a splash. Somebody that's like him in tonight's debate, they have to make a
Yeah,
splash.
I kind of agree with you. I think tonight might be a make or break moment for a few people. I don't think that it is for Biden or Kamala Harris. But I do think out of everybody on that stage, the person who has the most to lose is probably Joe Biden.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. We'll see what happens tonight. I'm really looking forward to it. I promise you, I'm gonna be texting you in our group. You know, we're gonna go back and forth. We're gonna see how it goes. But until then, until next week, folks. Whenever Frank and I could get back with you. Well, Frank, let me put it this way. Before I wrap this up, is there anything you want to say to everybody before I end this thing?
Thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to Phyllis for filling in. Thanks to you for keeping this thing going and keeping us on the right direction. And it's just good to be back. Can't wait to do it again.
It's good to have you back. I missed you. Okay, folks, everybody who's listening, like I say every Wednesday, like I say every Sunday with Master Grant, your time is very valuable, and the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us, trust me when I tell you, it means a great deal to us. It means a whole lot. You don't understand how much it means to us. We talk about it all the time. So until next week, same bat time, same bat channel. If you don't understand what that means, you're far too young to be listening to this podcast. For Frank and for myself, keep fighting the good fight, folks. And we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye, good luck, and God bless. Keep fighting the good fight, folks. And we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye, good luck, and God.
Butchered Sports, raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Holy Sh with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, Holy Sh.